From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made last week when President Biden announced that companies with 100 or more employees are going to have to require workers to be vaccinated or take weekly COVID tests. The official mandate has not yet been circulated, but legal challenges have already been launched. Some Republican governors are challenging what is coming, and it could be coming in days or maybe a few weeks still. South Carolina Governor Henry McMaster said that he is going to fight, quote, to the gates of hell to protect the liberty and livelihood of every South Carolinian, end quote. Then there's South Dakota Governor Kristi Noem, a potential presidential candidate, who says she will be preparing a lawsuit. J.D. Vance is an Ohio conservative running for a U.S. Senate seat. He called for mass civil disobedience over this. Meanwhile, President Biden accused governors and opponents of this of being cavalier with the health of people, particularly vulnerable older people and younger Americans. Advisor Andy Slavitt says this mandate would be a necessary step to control a still raging pandemic. Millions of Americans would be affected by the mandates. And so what do we know at least at this point? Could this hold up in court? Our guests look at what we do know so far about this proposal and how it fits or doesn't within the context of the law. Ibrahim Tariq is an attorney with the Labor and Employment Practice Group at Harris Beach. Ibrahim, welcome. Thanks for being here.
It's a pleasure to be here, Evan.
And Elizabeth Cordello, chair of the Labor and Employment Practice Group at Polano & Farrow. Beth, welcome back to the program.
Thank you.
Beth Cordello, is this a mandate? I mean, I was saying before the program, from my lay perspective, if you tell a company, you got to tell all your employees they got to get vaccinated, that sounds like a mandate. If you tell companies, you got to get everybody vaccinated, or they got to take weekly tests, that sounds more like a choice, although certainly the effect is to try to get more people vaccinated. Is it a mandate?
So the way this will materialize, Evan, is that the president has directed OSHA to issue an emergency temporary standard mandating the vaccine with a testing alternative for employers with 100 employees or more. Employers still do have the option of eliminating a testing alternative and just having a vaccine mandate, understanding there should be medical exemptions and religious exemptions, or they can follow what OSHA's temporary standard says and offer a testing alternative. The sticking point there for employers is who pays for the test and who pays for the time in testing. But yes, that will be a mandate for employers with 100 employees or more.
So mandate sounds like the right word.
Correct.
Despite the option. Okay. And last time we talked a few months ago on this program, it's like you could see the future.
Yes.
There were all kinds of questions that were going to be coming because we knew mandates in various forms would be coming. One of the early questions people had was, can companies mandate vaccination for employees? The answer generally to that is yes.
Correct.
As you said. This is different, though, with a government mandate. It wasn't clear if this was going to come. This is not a mandate for everyone in the population to get vaccinated. It's targeted at companies of a certain size. Is there any argument that says that's too arbitrary, 100 employees? Why not 90 employees? Why not 500 employees? Why 100?
So that will be certainly a subject of legal challenge. People who are against this are saying, you know, designating 100 plus employees across the board is arbitrary. Why not in areas where there's high positivity rates for everybody? And then also, OSHA can only issue an emergency temporary standard if there is a, quote, grave danger. And, you know, is there truly a grave danger? In some places, yes. In some places, no. And depending on the industry, the danger might be more or less. So on those grounds, I'm betting there will be legal challenges.
Okay. Ibrahim, what was your first reaction when you saw this? Any surprise? And, you know, sort of in terms of the legal formulation and how this holds up in court, what came to mind first for you?
Sure, sure. So not a surprise. I think we were waiting for some time to see whether a government mandate like this would be coming. When it seemed like the vaccination rates did not rise to where the government, where the administration was hoping they would. On the scope of legal challenges, I think we already know that a legal challenge, more than one most likely, is coming. For attorneys, the question is, or the question that we look at is, what's the likelihood that this stands? OSHA's power to issue an emergency standard like this, they've only done it 9 times in their history. And they have they're batting close to 500 on whether they stand up in court. That remains to be seen.
Okay. It sounds like both of our guests at this point, you can see the legal arguments on both sides of this. Are you willing to make it? Do you think this is likely to stand up, Ibrahim?
At this point, I'm likely to, I'll say that it's likely to be challenged. I'm not sure.
Well, that's an easy one.
Very lawyerly answer, I suppose. The question, I believe, for OSHA to answer will be whether the requirement for vaccination is necessary. Mm-hmm. As Beth said, it's grave danger. Courts have also said when an emergency standard like this has been before them in the past, not just grave danger, but whether it is necessary. I think one argument in opposition to this might be vaccinations might not be required, especially in areas where there is not currently a high rate of positivity. Perhaps masking would be better.
Okay. And do you have thoughts on where this is likely to end up after a court challenge?
You know, it's so hard to say because it's in many ways unprecedented that OSHA would tell private business to have their workers vaccinated, with the lines that have been drawn the way they've been drawn with 100 plus employees across the board, regardless of positivity rate. So it's really hard to predict.
Okay. And I actually don't think, for listeners who think this is a dodge from our guest, it sounds to me like it's very hard to predict because there are logical arguments on both sides of this.
Correct.
And so then how quickly are we likely, Beth, how quickly are we likely to get an answer if, let's say, the official order from OSHA comes 2 weeks from now and you see immediate challenges? How quickly do we get an answer on that?
I think the courts are processing these fairly quickly, understanding the importance of them. As you may have seen, a temporary restraining order was filed against the healthcare mandate here in New York State on September 13th. On September 14th, a restraining order was issued. So the courts are moving quickly because they understand how important this is.
You agree, Ibrahim? I mean, is this something that is not likely to drag out too long?
I would agree with that, yes. And one of the problems that we can see coming as well is not just one legal challenge to this OSHA rule whenever it comes out, but multiple challenges. And it's possible that multiple challenges lead to multiple answers from separate courts, which would then infer that we need some sort of an appellate ruling relatively quickly.
Andy Slavitt is one of the advisors to the Biden administration, and he has a podcast called In the Bubble. And he was talking to Ed Yong last week, who's one of the great journalists on the pandemic, won a Pulitzer Prize last year for it. And Slavitt said that this order from the Biden administration comes because the administration is frustrated with the fact that the United States, because of vaccine supply, had essentially a head start on most of the world in vaccination. And within days now, we're going to be last in the world in terms of wealthy countries. Vaccination rates. We're on track to be last. So he said the administration said, well, this is not working. We have more than 1,000 people dying every day, and we have to do something. So can I ask both of you what the effect has already been for perhaps clients who come to you for help in various ways, whether it's to file challenges to this, whether it's to come up with ways to comply to this? Ibrahim, let me start with you. What are you hearing so far?
Well, the first thing that we're seeing, at least from our clients, is for those companies that did not yet have a vaccine mandate, they are now quickly gearing up to implement it. And that means figuring out who in their population, their employee population, is already vaccinated. So things like employee surveys to identify who was vaccinated. From there, looking at if the vaccination rate is low enough or would infer that there's going to be some struggle to get employees vaccinated, what's the impact on operations that would have?
In other words, are people going to quit over this, it sounds like?
Yes.
Okay. And the extension is what you are telling us, tell me if I'm wrong, is that there are numerous companies in different fields, by the way, not just, you know, sort of private sector. I mean, we're talking healthcare workers. We're talking in a lot of different fields. There are companies that believe they will lose workers over this. Is that fair?
That's correct, yes.
Okay. What are you generally advising them then when they come to you and say, look, we didn't have a mandate before, we're going to lose workers. What are we supposed to do about this?
Well, it's not a position that I would envy. Right now, the line that many employers, especially those in healthcare, have to provide is, this is not an option for us. We have to do this. We're being ordered to do this by either the state government or soon the federal government. The answer to provide to companies is to weather the storm as much as possible. And perhaps for some, depending on the realities in their workforce, see how the legal challenges shake out.
Our guests, Ibrahim and Elizabeth Cordello, they're not really here to sort of weigh in and tell you their personal opinions on people quitting work over there. I mean, they're really here to give you the legal formulations that are in front of companies, the government, what the challenge looks like, what individual workers may be considering. But I will say, if listeners thought, well, we're not actually going to see nurses quit over this, we have found out that we will, and we are, and we are seeing that in various places, and that will probably continue to the point where there are some operations that healthcare facilities may not be able to undertake or undertake as much because of staffing. It's hard to believe for some people, but that is definitely happening. So when Ibrahim talks about, you know, companies saying, you know, what do we do about this? We haven't had a mandate. That is where we are. We are seeing people quit over this. Are you seeing the same, and is it the same sort of work at Polano and Faro over this?
So yes, and I think probably where I see it, where it's really a crisis, is in the healthcare industry, where we already had staff shortages in nursing homes and hospitals, and significant numbers of people are unvaccinated and don't plan to get vaccinated, and the lower wage healthcare workers can go get jobs elsewhere earning the same or more, and they would rather do that than get the vaccine. And so, you know, for example, with, you know, nursing home facilities or other covered healthcare entities, you know, the terrible choice they're weighing is maybe we, you know, don't comply with the mandate, because if we do, we won't be able to provide adequate care to our patients or our residents. And we would rather provide adequate care and be out of compliance with the vaccine mandate than follow the vaccine mandate and not having people get the care they need and deserve.
Yeah, different facilities talking about cutting back or eliminating labor services for expectant mothers. I mean, it's a wide range. It's really, so I don't envy the choice either.
Right.
And I understand that dilemma. Listeners, if you've got questions or comments, we've started to see some emails. If you want to send more as we talk about a vaccine mandate from the Biden administration and from OSHA that appears to be forthcoming, it's 844-295-TALK, toll-free, 844-295-8255, 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. You can email the program connections@WXXI.org. If you've got questions about the impact on workers, options for workers, company options, if you want to tell us essentially how your company has handled this as well, we'll take questions or comments for our guests here. And one question that, I mean, kind of started to touch on this, but let's make sure people understand, because this is a question that's come up to us a number of times in just the last week. If a worker quits over this and says, no, I will not get vaccinated, I'll go on unemployment. Are you eligible for unemployment if you quit over this?
Great question. I have, maybe you have, Ibrahim, but I have not seen the Department of Labor come out with a formal position as to whether you are eligible for unemployment insurance benefits if you refuse to get the vaccine. I know the commissioner of the Department of Health said they should not be eligible, but he's not in charge of the Department of Labor, and I have yet to see the Department of Labor take a position.
Is there an expectation either way on this?
They're going to have to decide, because the applications are going to come in.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. You want to add to that? I mean, is that essentially where...
Well, the general rule basically is you would be eligible for unemployment if you lost your job for no fault of your own. The question then becomes, is losing your job because you refused a work rule, the work rule in this case being vaccinated, does that qualify as misconduct? If it does, and the DOL says so, then that would negate unemployment benefits for this swath of the population that's not willing to get vaccinated.
Boy, so there are a lot of legal questions that are going to have to be decided pretty quickly on this. And going back to what a court may say about this, is it possible that a court may, I don't know where we got this phrase, split the baby? Who's splitting babies? We should leave babies whole. I don't know why we split babies. Could the court split the baby and say, instead of saying OSHA's mandate's upheld or it's thrown out entirely, could a court come back and say, to the point that Ibrahim and Beth were making, this mandate holds if you are in a place with infection rates at X, hospitalization rates at X, or death rates at X for COVID, and the second you are out of that, the mandate is gone. Is that possible?
I'm not sure a court would do it like that, because okay, what a court would be looking at with respect to the OSHA rule, not to get overly technical, but they're going to see whether the rule itself or in full should be upheld. We haven't seen the rule yet. It's not out yet. It's entirely conceivable that the rule changes heavily when it does come out. And perhaps there is something in there that says vaccines are required if the region in where the employer is located reaches a certain threshold. What we've seen so far and what we've heard so far, however, is not that. It's going to be a 100 employee threshold. Everybody has to get vaccinated. And the question becomes, can that be upheld or not?
Okay. Yeah. Beth, Sam, you agree that we're likely to see it sort of thrown out or upheld and not sort of nuanced?
I would say the court would more likely put it back to OSHA to rewrite it than try to rewrite it themselves.
Yeah. Okay. Fair enough. And before I grab a phone call, I'll take Adam from Rochester in a second. Joel writes in to say, on the subject of unemployment, you are not eligible for unemployment benefits if you turn down job offers. And in this case, you would be turning down a job offer if you quit over a vaccination mandate. What do you think?
That's generally true, yes. However, there are some nuances to that rule. They would go down to what's the kind of job that's being offered, what's the rate of pay. But generally, yes, in the future, if an unemployed worker seeks out a position and the position says, or the employer says, you must be vaccinated to be here, that's another question that's going to have to be answered by the state.
Okay. Elizabeth Cordella, what do you think?
So another, in the context of the healthcare mandate where there is no religious exemption and somebody has a sincerely held religious belief and a tenet of that belief is they should not receive the COVID-19 vaccination, is that a willing refusal of work? I don't know. And I haven't heard the Department of Labor comment on that yet.
Okay. And other questions as well about state mandates and what happened in Utica with the judge temporarily blocking a vaccine mandate for healthcare workers. We'll get to that in just a second. Let me grab Adam from Rochester first on the phone. Hi, Adam. Go ahead.
Hey, Evan. Love the show. I actually, during this past year, left a larger company to go to a much smaller company. I mean, I remember people walking up and down the halls eating bags of chips. I mean, within the first 3 months of the outbreak, but everyone I work with now is 100% vaccinated, just as a general rule, not even a written rule. But the last place I was at, hundreds of people, I am much happier now than I was.
And okay, so you're making the point that when we talk about people quitting over the vaccine mandate, there are people who have already either quit or moved jobs because for the opposite reason, that they didn't feel like enough of their colleagues were vaccinated.
Absolutely. I'm sure there are plenty of others just like me who felt the exact same way and made that change.
Adam, how did you know how many people in your company, the previous one, were vaccinated?
We didn't. It was, secret ballot, I guess.
Is it the kind of thing where you sort of ask around at work and you kind of get a sense for it?
Yeah, you can tell. And then when we had to sign our lives away to take our masks off before Delta came sweeping in, you'd count the number of masks the first day, the second day, and then the number of masks fell quite a bit of ways. And, you know the people who aren't going to, and you know the people who are. Just through talking to people, just knowing your coworkers.
Yeah, I appreciate that, Adam. Thank you for the phone call. And on that note, a couple of things here. Similar to asking your colleagues what they make, we've talked about this issue. Just remind people, can you ask colleagues if they're vaccinated?
So the EEOC is a little bit contrary on this because on the one hand, they say asking about somebody's vaccination status is not a medical inquiry for purposes of the Disability Act, but information about somebody's vaccination status is confidential information. So you have to be careful as an employer in terms of sharing the vaccine status with the vendors you work with, the patrons that you serve. And, somebody spreading around that somebody is or isn't vaccinated, that could be in violation of the confidentiality rules of the Disability Act. So that has to be handled with care.
I'm not, by the way, maligning what Adam is just describing, what most people end up doing in
right.
most workplaces.
Exactly.
It sort of gets around. Some people are very public about the fact that they either are or are not vaccinated. Some people are very private. But it becomes pretty clear when people are very public about it. That's different than, Ibrahim, you're sitting at lunch with coworkers and you're talking about TPS reports and cover sheets.
That's what we do.
and you say, hey, by the way, Bob, are you vaccinated? Would you advise against that sort of being that blunt?
I would advise against it, yes. The difficulty is, however, there is something that a company says to do. There's the HR team, whoever it might be, carries out whatever that rule is. People in the workforce, however, going through their day-to-day, as you said, looking through their whatever paperwork they have, they're going to talk just the same way people talk about how much do you make or did you hear about that bonus or this bonus. It gets around. And to the point that the caller was making, we've seen that equally as well, where there is a war for talent in the area already. And an employer's stance on vaccination could either be a benefit or a drawback to a certain employee.
Yeah, I think that's well said. And there's a note from another listener that I think dovetails with this. Mimi says, Evan, we are the silent majority, the people who don't want to go into a hospital and be treated by unvaccinated staff, whether medical staff or other services. We are not picketing the hospitals and medical facilities. We just want a safe environment for our family members. That's from Mimi. I take the point, Mimi. I understand. And I mean, let's be clear. A lot of the protesting we're seeing outside medical facilities, et cetera, that does not represent mainstream American views. But it's not just an outlier small fringe. I mean, there's a significant amount of people who don't want to be vaccinated and don't want to be told they have to be vaccinated. But for people like Mimi, or perhaps people like Adam, who might say, what about us? What if we want some sort of legal protection that says when we go to work, everyone will be vaccinated? Does that exist in any form? And is there any recourse for workers who do want mandates like this?
Well, I think that's exactly what the president's administration is banking on, that there is a more popular segment of the population that would say, we want our coworkers to be vaccinated. We were hoping that everybody would do it voluntarily, but now that that's not happened, more measures are now being put in place. Whether that's a political winner or not, that I don't know yet.
Okay. Beth?
Same. I would agree.
Okay. Kevin says, it's funny how we just glaze right over the fact that the whole mandate is clearly unconstitutional and completely against the Nuremberg Code. End of conversation. Well, that's it. That's the end of the conversation, everybody. We're going to take a 30-minute break, and we'll join you at 1 o'clock. Thank you, Kevin. I don't mean to be flippant, but Kevin is also not a lawyer. It is not clearly unconstitutional. It's being heavily debated in legal circles already. But, unless I'm missing something. Is against the Nuremberg Code clearly unconstitutional?
No, not vaccines. No.
Okay.
Not at all.
Okay. Thank you. But on the subject of this debate about constitutional or not, I'll read a little bit of what Larry Gostin had to say. Larry's faculty director at Georgetown University's O'Neill Institute for National and Global Health Law and the author of Global Health Security, A Blueprint for the Future. Larry said the Biden administration will need to counter arguments about whether a law addressing workplace conditions can reasonably be applied to a disease. And he says, in my view, the president's on rock solid legal ground. He's acting under a direct authority. And Congress has ample authority, ample constitutional power to grant this power to the president because businesses, particularly large businesses, say of 100 or more employees, they are operating in interstate commerce. So Gostin's pointing to various sort of threads that may be able to hold together and be a firewall against a legal challenge here. Doesn't seem quite as clear to you, to our guests. I mean, I'm going to guess that you both think that Larry Gostin might plausibly be correct, but you're not certain that the court's going to see it that way.
That's what I would say, yes. The question, I think, before the court first is going to be, is OSHA's emergency standard, is that okay? Is there really a grave danger to employees posed by unvaccinated employees? And if so, is this standard necessary to protect against that grave danger? That is the succinct legal question that will be in front of the courts. Matters like constitutionality, I'm sure, will be thrown in there, but I think that primarily will be the first question.
Yeah, and Gostin addressed this. You heard Ibrahim say earlier this hour that with OSHA, there's been, what, 9 similar sort of mandates?
Correct.
They're batting roughly 500 with getting them either thrown out or held up legally. And this is what Larry Gostin said about that. He said, the first challenge that probably will be made is to say that when Congress passed OSHA, it intended to regulate unsafe conditions in a workplace, but not a vaccine or an infectious disease. But I think that's a frivolous argument because a worker who is exposed to potentially a deadly infectious disease like SARS-CoV-2 is as much at risk, if not more, than of having a workplace injury. And the truth is that workers who are in close proximity to one another with a surging, highly infectious Delta variant are placed in an extraordinarily hazardous position. And it's the responsibility of the president and the Department of Labor to ensure their safety, end quote. So Gostin's saying, yeah, that's probably the grounds that we're going to see this on. Does that sound like the first argument that we're going to see in court to you, Beth?
So, yeah, that's to the issue of whether, in fact, there's a grave danger. I think, You know, one argument against that is the fact that it's not really tailored to a particular industry where people are close together.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's OSHA has traditionally operated in certain rules for manufacturing, certain rules for healthcare. This is not industry specific or taking into account how the workplace operates to the extent you're close together, you're interacting with the public or any of that. It's just 100 plus employees. So, you know, is that really the way to solve the grave danger? That will be the question.
Chris writes, Evan, I agree that some unvaccinated workers may quit in the face of vaccine mandates. What about people quitting because their employer will not protect them? Any data on what proportion of people want to quit if vaccine mandates are not enforced? Again, Chris, I'll say there's a couple of the layers of what the Biden administration is doing. As our guests have pointed out here, there's the legal question and then there's the political question. And I think they are banking. I think our guests are correct that there is a larger called a silent majority or a less vocal majority that does want some sort of standard of vaccination for workplaces. But it's never going to be as loud. That's just not how these things go. And so a lot of the noise, a lot of the attention tends to be a protest by the side of the street, outside of a hospital, outside of a company with a vaccine mandate. And in terms of data on what proportion of people want to quit, I haven't seen anything like that. But, you know, on the political question, I think the Biden administration feel like they're on pretty good ground here. It's just going to find out if it works in court. But I appreciate the point there, Chris. And Mark says, Evan, as far as I understand, healthcare workers are required in New York State to get certain vaccinations to work in their industry. I could be wrong. If that is the case, why has this become such an issue in healthcare? I know I wouldn't want to be treated if I fell ill by someone who could infect me or cause me to possibly die. So Mark's point is, this is not the first vaccine. What is different about this one? What's going on here? Let me ask our guest, Beth Cordello, can you start on that one?
So he's right. Mandatory vaccinations in healthcare is nothing new. And prior to COVID, you know, most litigation is on, for example, the flu vaccine. I think what a couple of things that are happening right now that are unique is that the religious exemption has been removed from the state's mandate. A lot of questions there. And for whatever reason, there are a significant number of healthcare workers that do not want the COVID-19 vaccine specifically. They had no problem with the flu vaccine or the other vaccines, but this one, they're drawing the line. They don't want to get it. And, you know, I understand, you know, people that are being treated at hospitals or other healthcare providers, you know, they want to be serviced by providers that are vaccinated. Those healthcare providers don't have that luxury when there are already staff shortages. You know, having somebody unvaccinated is better than being short-staffed in their view.
You want to add to that?
That's absolutely right. And going back to the flu vaccine, this is not the first time that lawyers have seen a battle in the healthcare industry over employees getting vaccinated. The flu vaccine issues have come up in the last few years. I think one difference there is that for many hospitals, many institutions permitted in lieu of a flu vaccine to wear a mask, maybe not necessarily in New York State, not necessarily in this region, but certainly healthcare systems, there are court cases on this point exactly where an individual didn't want the flu vaccine, wore a mask instead. The rules with COVID have changed that. And under the state health department's rules right now, a vaccine is mandatory.
To be clear on this subject of what happened, for example, in Utica, a judge temporarily blocked the state's vaccine mandate for healthcare workers because 17 healthcare workers sued under the reason that there were no religious exemptions. That's right?
That's correct, yes.
Right. All the providers were Christian. And interestingly, and to Ibrahim's point about different courts having different results, I think a similar challenge was brought in Long Island, and the judge saw it the other way and did not grant the injunction. But here we have in Utica, the judge did. So that's what we're looking at with these legal challenges being brought.
Okay.
And similar to what OSHA may have to deal with, where a court comes back and says that this rule is invalid, the question now for the state health department is, do we tailor this rule a bit more, or do we scrap it and start over? Do we adopt a new rule with an objection in there for those who, with a provision in there for those who don't want the vaccine on faith grounds?
On other grounds, in Arizona, the lawsuit in Arizona was filed by the attorney general there. He says that a vaccine mandate violates the Equal Protections Clause and that it will favor workers from outside of the United States rather than its own citizens. Does that hold up to you?
I'm not exactly sure I see the logic behind that. I would have to see what the papers actually say, but it seems like an argument that might not be a winner from my perspective.
Okay, Elizabeth?
Not knowing more, I'm not following the logic there either.
Okay. I've got email from Martine. We'll take coming back. As we go to our only break here, Tim, thank you for bailing me out here. So the whole thing on splitting the baby, you want to know? I want to know this.
Oh, I know. It's
King Solomon.
King Solomon.
How did I not know this? King Solomon was the guy who proposed cutting a baby in half when two women both claimed the child is theirs. He figured that the one who said no was likely the true mother. So he didn't really want to cut any babies in half. He was just, it was a clever way. So we should stop cutting babies in half. No more cutting babies in half. Thank you, Tim. I should have known. Did not. Let's take our only break. And when we come back here, Elizabeth Cordello, chair of the Labor and Employment Practice Group at Polano & Farrow, Ibrahim Tariq, an attorney with the Labor and Employment Practice Group at Harris Beach. They are here taking your questions and comments, and we've got a bunch more. We'll keep working through them. Got some lines open if you want to call the program. It's 844-295-TALK. It's toll-free, 844-295-8255, 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. Or you can email us. It's connections@WXXI.org. Coming up in our second hour, California Governor Gavin Newsom won easily in the recall election that aimed to remove him. So he will stay as California governor. What do we learn from this? The polling was pretty good in this. The data was pretty good on who would show up, and we're comparing that to recent elections. How do the parties cut into each other's margins? Didn't work this time. We'll talk about it next hour.
This is Veronica Volk from WXXI News, and we've got a new weekly podcast for you. It's called Earshot. And it's got all the most important, best told, sometimes off the beaten path news stories from your favorite WXXI and city reporters. Earshot comes out every Friday. Don't miss it. Subscribe wherever you find your podcasts.
This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Ray in Henrietta says, I am very pro-vaccine, but I take issue with having to show my medical documents to prove it. The reason I take issue is because I am diabetic and I've been medically discriminated against in the past, and I don't want my employer having any of my medical documents. Ibrahim Tariq, let me start with you. What would you say to Ray?
Well, under both state and federal law, employees who have a disability are entitled to an accommodation. However, for most employers, and indeed under the law, it's permissible for the employer to request medical documentation that supports that the individual, that the employee has a medical condition. To the extent that somebody does not want their employer to know anything about their conditions, it's going to be difficult for the employer to provide any accommodation if they don't know that that something is wrong.
You want to add to that?
So yes, if an individual is seeking an accommodation for a disability, you have to have an open dialogue about the nature of the disability in order to, you know, figure out what accommodations might work best. If as a general proposition, you're not requesting accommodations and you don't want people to know you're diabetic, then you have a right to keep that information confidential.
Okay. Good luck, Ray. Thank you. Let me get Sarah in Irondequoit on the phone. Hi, Sarah. Go ahead.
Hi, Evan. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
The other day about another hospital that asked its workers who were refusing the COVID vaccine to also refuse Tylenol, because Tylenol and other super common medications like allergy medicine and ibuprofen were also developed either through fetal cell testing or testing babies. And so I'm wondering what the hospitals will do to see if they can to have people prove that they're not, that they're using this religious exemption fully. Because if they're using it for the vaccine, they should be using it everywhere else, right? And not having anything in their system that has ever been developed with fetal cells, right?
Yeah, I mean, I know there's been debates about this, or this has been a core of the concern from some of the challenges. Just reading from Nebraska Medicine, they write, no, the COVID-19 vaccines do not contain any aborted fetal cells. Fetal cell lines, cells grown in a laboratory based on aborted fetal cells collected generations ago, were used in testing during research and development of the mRNA vaccines and during production of J&J.
But that's different. And lots of other medicines that people use all the time.
Yes.
But they're not refusing those. So I'm just wondering how we can, you know, ensure that people are being truthful with using a religious exemption. That's all. That's the end of my call. Thanks.
Yeah, I appreciate that, sir. There's 2 points I think that part of this here is number one is just let's try to communicate as honestly as we can about what we know about this. And let's not sort of tell ghost stories just to try to score political points here. Let's be accurate with what we're talking about. Now, if you know the facts that Sarah just gave you and that Nebraska Medicine and many others are giving you about the history of using cells from generations ago or lab cells in production of not only J&J or mRNA, but also, as she mentions, ibuprofen, other common drugs, if that still bothers or offends you on some sort of religious ground, okay, but it's not the same as a lot of the kind of ghost stories that we're hearing. And I appreciate Sarah's call because it is important to be accurate. Is there anything on religious grounds based on what we do know about how medicine's developed that stands up and says, you've got a religious reason to fight this in court?
So the analysis of whether someone should be granted an exemption for religious reasons is very subjective and in my opinion, very difficult and nuanced. On the one hand, yes, an employer can look at whether an employee has engaged in contrary behavior in the past to determine the sincerity of the belief. You know, for example, I don't believe in getting vaccines. Oh, well, so-and-so, you know, all along you've gotten the flu vaccine and you've gotten all of these vaccines, so that's not true. You know, there's that. On the other hand, there is case law that says, you know, somebody doesn't have to be a perfect practitioner of their faith in order to be accorded a religious exemption. So, you know, just because you're not the perfect Christian in every regard and follow every rule does not mean you should be denied an accommodation in one respect. So it's a difficult inquiry, and I think that's why the state health department removed the religious exemption altogether, because I think they suspected it would just be handed out regardless of legitimacy, and so the mandate would not be effective. But it is hard, and it is very subjective and should be, you know, reviewed on a case-by-case basis.
Okay, Ibrahim?
That's exactly right. And I think one of the problems that the courts have, and as a result, a problem that companies and HR people have, is the courts are extremely reluctant to gauge the sincerity of a religious trust or belief. The courts are reluctant to impose a shibboleth requirement on any plaintiff coming forward saying, this is part of my faith, I don't want to get this vaccine, or I can't do this. For example, I can't work on Fridays, I can't work on Sundays, whatever it might be. The balance, however, shifts back to the employer at the second stage of that analysis, which is, okay, they have an objection to it. What's the accommodation that we can provide? And in those cases, as opposed to an accommodation for a medical reason, the burden is slightly lighter on the employer. If the accommodation would prove more than a minimal burden on the employer, there is no accommodation that is necessary.
Okay. Martine writes, we have an employee who is holding out to get the vaccine, thinking that the mandate will be reversed. It's so disruptive. She won't say whether or not she's getting the vaccine. Besides the fact that we work in a hospital setting with immune-compromised people, can we post her job before she makes her decision? Is she entitled to unemployment if we do that? That's from Martine. What would you say?
I think that this is a common question, a common issue that many companies in the area and indeed in the country are going to be facing. The challenge is going to be, before this standard is ruled on by the courts, do we go right ahead and implement it right now? For any company that's thinking about not following that, I think you do so at your own risk. There are penalties that could be associated with failing to comply. There's also equally the possibility that eventually it does hold up in court. And at that point, your workforce is just, you're behind, and you will need to get everyone having their shots sooner rather than later.
Okay. You want to add to that?
So, yeah, there are a lot of holdouts, you know, given the flux, given the legal challenges. There are a lot of employees saying, I'm just going to wait and see. Can I not disclose my status until I have to? And, you know, depending on the nature of the industry, you know, they're reacting differently. If there are staff shortages, the employer might be on board with dragging our feet. You know, even with the challenges that Ibrahim mentioned, you know, if they're wrong and it's upheld. Other employers, they're just moving ahead with a vaccine mandate. Vaccination status in and of itself is not a protected status. You can, you know, say we only want vaccinated workforce here. You know, there are some complications in that, but you could, you know, generally terminate somebody for refusing to get vaccinated if you have a policy on that.
We got a little bit more time if you want to send emails, connections@wxxi.org. I'm going to read a couple. Well, I'm going to summarize one, and then I'm going to read Andy's. I have a long email from someone who says they work in healthcare who supports a testing alternative versus vaccination-only mandates in workplaces. This is a healthcare worker who is making the claim that testing and masking is more effective than vaccination because vaccine efficacy wanes. We got to be really careful when we start saying stuff like that. Masking is, we got a lot to learn about masking with Delta. I keep telling you that the last couple of weeks, there was a great study out of Bangladesh, and everyone ought to try to just read summaries of it. Basically, what they found is KN95s and N95s are way better than cloth masking against Delta. Yes, a year ago, cloth masks did a lot for us. They're kind of negligible on their own against Delta because how transmissible it is. But KN95 and N95 are really good. That said, they're nowhere close to what vaccines are doing. Nowhere close. Look at the numbers in the American South right now, where the lowest vaccination is. It's a horror show. It's really, really hard to see people dying at these numbers every day unnecessarily. And it's not because they didn't wear a mask or they didn't get tested enough. It's because they're not vaccinated. That's why most people are dying. And I'm going to borrow that straight from the governor of West Virginia, a Republican named Jim Justice. That's why people are dying. It's not because you're not wearing your mask. So just be careful with that. Now, on the subject that this healthcare worker raises, a testing alternative. Okay, so let's talk a little bit about that because Andy wants to know, can you make the workers who are not vaccinated under this mandate, can you make the workers pay for their own tests? Let's talk about who's going to pay for this. Ibrahim, who's paying for these tests if this mandate gets upheld in court?
That might be the chief question that we're getting right now is from companies asking, if we have employees, we know they're not going to get vaccinated. They're going to want tests instead. Who pays for it? At that point, the test becomes a work requirement, in effect. Is this a test that we have to provide them? On top of that, it's a weekly test. We have to give them a month's supply of tests so that they have it ready to go. I believe the Biden administration received promises from major retailers that they would be selling at-home test kits at cost. But the question remains then, who's purchasing them? For individuals who are paid by the hour, if they have to buy it themselves and that modifies their regular rate of pay, is that something that the employer has to cover? It also brings up the next question that I get usually, which is, well, how accurate are the at-home tests? And that's not a question that I'm prepared to answer, but it's one of the questions that we're going to have to deal with.
Okay. You want to add to that?
So it's really difficult, and I'm hoping either the Department of Labor or the OSHA will issue some guidance because it's not clear who should pay for it if it's not covered by insurance, if you can't get it for free. I know the tests that are most accurate are the ones you go and get, and they're $100 or so, you know, as opposed to maybe the rapid at-home tests. You know, and then if you are sending employees to get tested off-site, do they get paid for the time testing off-site? These are very significant questions that have not been answered, and I'm hoping for guidance from the government on that.
I'm just going to share with what Michael Mina from Harvard says about rapid testing, because he's been one of the biggest proponents in epidemiology of the rapid instead of the PCR. He likes rapid better, even though Beth's right, the overall fuller accurate picture is the PCR. But they'll tell you if you had COVID 10 days ago and you still have little, you know, sort of viral particles in your system, and you might think you got a lockdown for a month. The rapid testing is better at telling you if you are currently transmissible as a carrier. So if you're infectious right now, they're really good. They're really good. They're not as good as telling you, hey, you're recovering and you had COVID last week and you finally get around to a test and it says you're negative and you go, well, I didn't have COVID, and you did. And they're maybe not as good as before you become infectious, but you've been exposed. That's another reason that Michael Mina says if you hang out with somebody and they call you the next day and they're like, hey, I'm really sorry. I was surprised. I just tested positive for COVID and you're feeling fine. And you think, well, I'll go do a rapid right now. You're probably 3 to 5 days away from really needing to really consistently check yourself. So if you get a negative right away, fine, but that may not be fully descriptive of what's going on. So the reason the Biden administration came around on these tests is doctors like Michael Mina said, make these available and have people do this a lot, not just once. If you're just looking for a quick snapshot, PCR is still better. But if you're doing rapid, day after day, especially if you think you've been exposed, you're going to probably get a really good picture of whether or not you're infectious. It's just a question of who pays for it. Where are all these tests coming from? Production was shut down at the beginning of this year because a lot of people thought the pandemic was over or close. And so now they got to ramp back up. Still a lot of questions about this. A lot of questions. Guess what the easier thing to do is? You don't need me to say it. It starts with a V. Kathy says, just curious if the vaccine... Oh, there's that word. It's a vaccine. Just curious if the vaccine is very safe. Why children under 12 can't get it? If the reason is there's not enough evidence to know yet, why would it be safe for a 14-year-old? Kathy, that is way outside the pay grade of our wonderful guests.
Yes.
The short answer to that is... We're going to know soon. They do tests at different age groups and they back it up. So they did adults, then they did 16 to 18, then they do 12 to 18, and then they were doing 8 years and up, and then five. And they're just trying to collect enough data to make sure the dosing is right. They're very confident, yes, but kids are still doing very well against COVID, and they want to make sure whatever they put on the vaccine market for kids is really safe. So, yeah, there's some stuff that's kind of arbitrary. A kid who's 11 years and 11 months old versus a kid who's 12 years and one day old, are they that different? No, but we have to draw arbitrary lines somewhere. But I think the answer to these things are that part is coming. We're going to see some approval for kids and vaccines pretty soon here. So good luck. I appreciate that, Kathy. And, you know, just Katie wants to know why are vaccinated people worried about being around unvaccinated people? Aren't vaccinated people safe? Yes, I'm not worried about me at all. I'm vaccinated. I'm not worried about me at all with COVID. I am worried about my mother, who is vaccinated, but, you know, certainly not great health and older. I'm worried about my stepfather, who's 88 and has had three cancers. I'm worried about people in my own life who are immune compromised. So that's why I think you're seeing the Biden administration step in and say, hey, don't just act like if you're vaccinated, you don't care about the rest of society, because there's still a small chance that you could pick up COVID and spread it around a little bit. Not nearly as much as if you're unvaccinated, but that's what I'm worried about. Also, I don't want to get sick, but that's where we are. As we get ready to wrap this program, I want to hit a couple of points before we go here, because we've had consistent questions from workers on what do I do if X, unemployment benefits, can we make other people get vaccinated? But when it comes to management and when it comes to lawsuits, where are the lawsuits likely coming from? Are they coming from state attorney generals or individual companies? If companies feel strong enough and they want to sue, are they going to you? I mean, where are the lawsuits coming from here?
So they might be coming from industry groups. Mm-hmm. They might be coming from, you know, with the recent temporary restraining order, it was 17 healthcare providers mm-hmm. that came together. It'll mostly be groups coming together. It could be nonprofits, you know, that litigate civil liberty issues or what have you. I think industry groups and not-for-profits that are devoted to these types of things are likely to bring the challenges.
And there will be challenges. So if you're a worker who feels very strongly about this and you don't want to get vaccinated and you're feeling like you want to sue, my guess is you probably don't have to, because there will be lawsuits filed in various places about this. You don't have to individually pursue this. And we'll get an answer pretty quickly for you and for your colleagues on this. But Beth Cordello told me years ago that if you can avoid really contentious litigation or quitting or harsh words with a boss, if you can avoid that, that's always better to find an amicable solution to any problem in a workplace.
Correct.
And if you are a worker who really feels strongly and does not want to get vaccinated and you're ready to quit right now, what would you advise people?
I would advise to keep the lines of communication open, see what can be done. You know, I'd hate to see anybody unnecessary, you know, lawsuits or anybody, talk to anybody who's been involved in one. They're awful. Even if you quote unquote win, you know, it's awful. So if I would try, use that as a last resort, if you will, try the other things first.
And what would you say to managers, employers who are struggling with employees who they don't feel like are compliant or causing an issue over this?
That's a case by case basis answer. it's a little bit less. Management will never want to get involved with a lawsuit if they can avoid it. And they'll take every step they can before they would go to that.
And they should take every step they can,
yeah.
Right? Yeah. What would you tell an employee? Let's start with an employee who really doesn't want to get vaccinated, is very nervous about this mandate that appears to be within days or a couple of weeks, and says, I'm quitting over this.
I would echo what Beth just said. Keep the lines of communication open. Do what we're doing right now, which is talk. Talk to trusted supervisors within your organization. Talk to HR. Let your concerns be known, because they want to know. They may want to know, and you might not be telling them. They may have concerns about coming to you because they think that you're going to present yourself as very argumentative. And in most cases, what we see is you start having that back and forth, that amount of dialogue, and the ice barriers start to break down. And that's the way to avoid litigation.
What would you say to managers and employers?
Echoing Beth again, case by case for sure. But if there is a way to avoid litigation, there's a way to avoid a dispute over this, especially a dispute that revolves around a single employee, which could take much longer to resolve. The way to go about it is to identify what your workforce needs proactively and go from there.
20 seconds for employees who feel like, hey, I still need help because I don't have benefits. I can't get this vaccine because if I miss a day of work and I'm sick, I'm going to lose my job. Is there any legal help for them, any support for them?
If
they're worried they're going to get fired if they get side effects from a vaccine and they miss a day of work.
So New York State will pay you get paid leave for that.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. New York State has a paid sick leave law, which can be used for symptoms from the vaccine.
I want to. Even for part-time employees or employees who don't have benefits, et cetera? Yes?
Absolutely, yes.
Yes.
That is so important, and I'm glad we squeezed that in.
Yeah.
Because there's a lot of people who are not vaccinated for very good faith reasons. They're worried about losing a job. You should be able to get support for that. Don't miss that chance. I want to thank our guests. Great stuff this hour. Ibrahim Tariq is an attorney with the Labor and Employment Practice Group at Harris Beach. Thank you for being here.
Of course. Thank you for having me.
And Elizabeth Cordello from Polano and Farrow. Thank you, Beth. Great having you.
Thank you.
More connections coming up in a moment.